Bootstrapped Web, episode 67. It's the show for you, the founder who learns by doing as you bootstrap your business online. Today, we're talking about the story of some of our failed startups from years past. And, you know, I'm sure we're going to uncover a few things that we haven't talked about much. From back in the days, but we're going to see if we can pull out any lessons from what we learned about these things as we were kind of getting started in all of this. So as always, I am Brian.
And I'm Jordan. I'm looking forward to the comedy and the tragedy of past failures, but we'll do our best to laugh at ourselves, not take it too seriously.
Yep. And we had a couple of new iTunes reviews in the last week. I'm going to pull out two of them here. The first one comes from IT Sniper. Love that name.
Yes.
5 stars. He says, episode 57 about sales funnels was pure gold. I'm building my first info product, and I'm hoping to stair step towards a full software product. And I'll see you guys at MicroConf. Very cool. You'll have to identify yourself as IT Sniper when we're out there at the after party. Derek Kuntz, 5 stars. He says, Brian and Jordan are excellent at exposing the myth of overnight success. Instead, they focus their discussion around real-world solutions. They rarely go off on tangents. Your time won't be wasted. And I don't know how to read today. I'm sure you'll appreciate how open they are. And thank you for the coaching and inspiration. Well, yes. Thank you, Derek. Thanks for tuning in.
And Derek, Derek is my homie on Skype. He and I just randomly.
Oh, you know.
Yeah, we just randomly chat. I don't know him. We just randomly chat on Skype every few like weeks or months and like give each other an update and like psych each other up and like give each other some ideas and like, all right, talk to you in a few months.
nice.
Oh, that's great. Cool. So thanks for the reviews.
All right, I'm here with Craig Hewitt. He's the founder of Podcast Motor. Craig, how's it going?
Doing great, Brian. How are you doing?
Good. So, you know, we've actually been working with you on, and you've been handling all the editing and posting for Bootstrapped Web, which has been absolutely awesome. Why don't you tell us, you know, how did you actually get into podcasts and how did Podcast Motor come about?
Yeah. So, you know, for the last few years, I've been a huge consumer of podcasts. I listen to a couple dozen shows every week, it seems like. And over the course of the last year or so, I started thinking, you know, hey, I should really start my own show. I feel like I've listened to enough good podcasts now that I know what a good one looks like and sounds like. And so I did. I started my own podcast just before the end of the year last year. It's in the startup space as well. And, you know, Brian was one of our first guests on the show. You guys can check it out if you'd like. And from there, I started thinking, man, this audio editing stuff is really challenging. There's a lot to it. It's easy to slap a few things together and make a recording, but to make a good recording actually is really difficult. So after I learned some of those skills over the last, you know, handful of months, I decided to put it together and offer it as a productized service. And you know, Podcast Motor basically does everything from the time you hit stop on the recording to when an episode goes live. And so we're really kind of creating a solution for our own problem with podcasts that I do, but also something that I think a lot of people would value as well.
Very cool. And, you know, I mean, as you know, I'm like very big on the whole productized service idea. And this is one of those things that I've just been thinking about for years, that someone should offer this, like a done for you, you know, podcast editing, setup, posting service so that the podcaster can just focus on recording. So that's actually my next question. It's like, how does Podcast Motor actually make the podcast hosts their lives easier?
So we know the most important thing for you as a podcast host is to create great content. And creating great content on just like online in a podcast is the most important thing. And so what we're doing is we're just freeing you of all the extra work you have to do aside from booking good guests, doing background research, and doing those recordings. We're doing all the legwork aside from creating that content to allow you to focus on what's really important for your show. So We take an episode after you finish recording. You'll upload a Dropbox. I'll take all those files and all the background music, all the transitions, all the ad spots, and mix those together, do a lot of audio engineering on it. Upload that to your media host if you use SoundCloud or Libsyn or whatever you use. We'll create a WordPress post complete with show notes and links and mentions and Twitter handles of your guests. And we'll do custom art for your WordPress post. And we'll publish everything for you. So all you have to do is create that killer content. I'm a podcaster myself, and I know that the most enjoyable time I have through the course of creating an episode is doing the recording, interviewing a guest, or talking with one of my co-hosts. And that's what we try to do, is just free you guys up to do the part that you love.
Yeah. And you've actually been like writing our show notes and writing our, creating, you know, the image that goes with the post. And those, you know, for those that don't know, I mean, that actually takes a lot of time to make sure that all the links are getting included and all that kind of stuff. I mean, what I love about it is that Jordan and I literally just hit record for about an hour, and then we drop our recording right into Dropbox, and everything else is just handled by Podcast Motor, which has been great. So, you know, last question here. As a listener, and since you're kind of in this space, you through your work and just as a fan, you listen to a lot of podcasts. So what would you say is like one or two tips that you can give other podcasters out there to help them make a really good program?
So I'll give two different suggestions, and one is on content and the other is a little technical. On content, I would just say, just be true to who you are and listen to your own voice. John Lee Dumas and Pat Flynn have already created those shows, right? So Entrepreneur on Fire and Smart Passive Income are already there. Don't go replicating them. Don't even try. You can't do it. But there's going to be someone and a whole bunch of people probably that love everything you have to say, because you have a very unique perspective on things. So just go with that and embrace it. And then from a technical perspective, I would say just invest in a good mic. The one I like is the Audio-Technica ATR2100. It's a great mic. It's $50 on Amazon, and it gets you most of the way to what a studio quality recording will sound like. So I would just say invest in a good mic. You won't be sorry you did.
That's awesome. Yeah, I really like both of those tips there. Well, Craig, thank you so much, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks so much, Brian.
All right, so if you want to learn more about Podcast Motor, head over to podcastmotor.com. Be sure to mention Bootstrapped Web when you sign up, and Craig will give you 2 free episodes, fully edited, published for you. It's a great service. We use it here on Bootstrapped Web, and it's been fantastic for us. So thank you, Craig, and on with the show.
All right, cool. So before we jump into the topic, let's do a little bit of an update. Brian, you did the intro. I go first on the updates. Nothing too long. So one of the things I've noticed over the past week or two, I am a pile of procrastinating shit. That's just like naturally speaking, that's who I am. But if you inject deadlines, like real deadlines, I'm amazingly productive. So now with a new co-founder, I'm like setting these deadlines. Like, we need to finish this by Friday. You have to do your part. I have to do mine. And all of a sudden, because it's like a deadline, it's almost like I'm back in college, you know, like writing the 8-page paper the night before. It all of a sudden magically gets done. So yeah, so I found that to be very, very useful. The next thing is I've been struggling with time management. So the team is growing a little bit. Our Slack is like busy. And because I am like the original founder and I kind of know more about e-commerce, whatever the hell it is, I'm all of a sudden getting inundated with like requests for my time. Like, I have a question on here. I have a question on this. This sales prospect has this question. And I'm trying to build this new feature, but how should this work? And so that's like throwing off my rhythm severely.
Yeah, that took me like at least a year or two to really break out of that when I started growing the team on Restaurant Engine. And like, yeah, especially this bringing on the salesperson, because she has so many pre-sales questions that needed answers. And it took like a full year of me answering all these like relaying answers to her and then getting them all documented before that started to really cool off in terms of pulling my time.
Yeah. Fortunately, one thing that we're doing the right way is we have one sales guy who is freaking phenomenal. He is like a gem that we found him. And we are now hiring other salespeople, and we're having him train them. So not only is it from his point of view, it's also other people in the Philippines, so he can talk to them, you know, from a local perspective, and we're having him train, and we're just kind of watching and overseeing certain things. So at least that's working. But it's a tricky challenge, but it feels good. It feels like things are, you know, alive.
Yeah,
and,
cool.
And that's it, man. Just getting pumped up for MicroConf in Vegas. I was up late last night writing my my slides for the talk. Just, you know, getting excited to
looking forward to that.
Yeah, so be in the same room with a lot of people in the same boat. It's gonna be good.
Yeah, I can't wait for MicroConf. So you and I are both doing attendee talks this year, and we were just talking about this earlier. It's going to be cool because your talk is about outbound sales.
Yep.
And your whole system there. And my whole talk is basically about inbound sales and how we've done that in Restaurant Engine. So
yeah, it'd be nice to get, to cool. get both, yeah, both perspectives. How about you, Brian? What's going on?
So I guess at a high level, I've been in this weird mental state over the last few months. Some things have been going on both in my business and kind of in the personal life as well, but not going to get too much into that here, but I will say that I'm now kind of like breaking out of that, breaking out of a lot of it was kind of like decision fatigue. I was making a few pretty big decisions. We spoke about that on the podcast last week, and I wrote an article about that on the blog last week as well. Got a whole bunch of thoughts out there, but I did kind of come to a few big conclusions. And so now that I'm like, you know, the thing about the decision fatigue is that it just really paralyzes you. And like, you know, you talk about like time management and trying to be productive. That is the killer when it comes, like when you're trying to like decide one way or the other on something mm-hmm. or multiple things, it's like, where did this whole week go? I didn't do anything this week. I just sat around thinking about stuff. you know, that's kind of how I felt for the past month or so, but now I've got things moving along. I just moved into to a new office within the same building again. So this is kind of one of those decisions, but I'm now kind of like deciding to get back into making music this year, believe it or not. It's actually been like 8 to 10 years since I was pretty seriously into the music industry. I actually went to school for it, audio engineering and music production. I was getting into composing for television and film, and I'm actually looking to get a little bit back into that this year as some of my time is starting to free up. And you know, I like to a serious extent, like actually kind of build this into some kind of professional business direction. But you know, for right now, it's just a lot of like exploring all this and really doing a heavy dose of research into this industry and kind of catch up on the things that I've missed out on the last couple of years of kind of being out of the loop. I used to be so heavily into it when I was a little bit younger, but I missed it too. I missed the creative process of producing music, but also the business aspect. And it's been really cool to see how much of an online community there is of these like music professionals, basically people like producers, composers, audio engineers, you know, people working in studios, working for film and television and video games is a huge, huge part of that industry now, which was not the case 8 to 10 years ago. So I've been really excited about that, doing a lot of research and reading up in that world. That's been taking a lot of my time. But the other thing, back to the stuff that I've been doing these last few months and years, on the productized course and my newsletter and everything, I've been working, so today and yesterday I've been working on really dialing in the email automation that I do with the newsletter. So that means, I think I spoke a couple podcasts back about the weekly newsletter. I still try to send out and write a new article every 2-3 weeks or so, but I have a queue of about 3 months or so of weekly newsletters that go out to new subscribers before they get kind of put into the general pool who gets my latest newsletter. So it kind of like cycles through a bunch of stuff that I wrote over the past year, and then you get into the new stuff. So that's like one automation that's now in place today. But the other thing that I'm working on is kind of updating the funnel to lead into the productized course. I've had the productized crash course, like the free course, in place for a while. That's still there, but now I'm working on a webinar, but like a recorded workshop to kind of present as a middle step between the crash course and then the full productized course. And so I'm like working on different automation setups and sequences to get that stuff going. So that's been kind of fun.
Nice. That'll be interesting to see that start to get laid down. And you know, if you can get that working and running on its own, you know, that's the dream, baby.
Yeah, and that's really my focus on it now is trying to remove myself as much as I can from that, but really automate it and boost sales at the same time using the automation tools that we have at our disposal, you know, using like Drip and on the website and things like that. So that is about it on my update.
Nice, man. Got a lot going on. I'm excited to see what happens with the music side of things. Yeah, that'll be cool to watch over the next few months.
We'll see. I just dropped a whole bunch of cash on some new studio gear here in the new office. So I'm diving back into it. We'll see.
Oh yes. Nice, man. Well, today's topic is, it's like funny and not funny at all. So previous failed businesses, obviously, it sucks to fail. And I like what the guys at 37 Signals, say about it, where it's, you know, a lot of people say failing is like a learning experience. The truth is you could really do without that experience. If you could just skip the failure, it's really a lot better off.
Yeah, if only you can just like get those lessons and get those learnings, you know, faster than having to like waste all this time, or not waste, but spend all this time on something that just never even launched.
Yeah.
That's not how it works. I think you have to get through. Like, to me, the only way to do it is to learn by doing, and that's kind of what we're talking about here.
Yeah, but looking back, I really could have done without some of the mistakes that were pretty obvious, at least in hindsight. So today, I guess we could just kind of have a good laugh at looking back at some of our failed businesses. And this is, when I say some, I mean only some.
Yeah, and I think we're going to be talking about, so we each picked out three things from our past. And I guess I did kind of blog about some of these things in past years. But I think for the most part, people are not going to really even know what these are or have heard of these things. Because these are things that actually never... Well, at least in my case, they never really launched.
Okay, so mine are launched and failed.
Well, I should say actually one of my three kind of launched.
I can't even help but like get giddy and just laugh at this going back, because it's either that or cry, and I don't want to cry in a podcast. You know? Cool. So why don't we get
in the first one? I guess we'll go like back and forth. You want to start?
Yeah, let's go back and forth and just, you know, we'll just kind of talk a little bit about some of the lessons we learned from each one and maybe ask a question or two and riff off of it. But all right, so here's my first one. Right, so I was in the banking world. I left. I joined the family business. That was cool. And then at some point I was like, it's time. I need to go out on my own. I'm obsessed with the internet. I got to go that way. That's where I want my career to go. Cool. My first foray was primetimepolitics.com. Now, this thing was awesome. It's just that it didn't make money. So besides that, it was a great business. So what this was, this was like 2004-ish. So this is the height of politics insanity. You know,
right,
like
because 2004 was a presidential election year.
It was presidential election. It was Bush. It was Iraq. I mean, it was nutty, and there was a lot of energy, and I had gone full – I got really into it. I got really into politics and ideas and ideology, and just I got really, really interested in it, and that was my passion. And here's the lesson.
Well, before we get into the lesson, I'm curious about this site.
Now, Brian, don't ask questions you don't want answers to, okay?
No. We're not going to get into the politics part of it.
Right.
I think we're on two ends of the spectrum there, but... I am curious, like, were you like heavily into politics yourself, and that's what led into this idea, or were you into the idea of starting like a news website business and then picking a topic, let's go with politics, or what were you thinking there?
So I was really into politics and the internet, and so I was just devouring opinion pieces, learning who the best writers were, reading books, reading magazines. I was just full blown, really, really into it. I was arguing with friends. I was arguing online. It was just super, super interesting. I like felt like myself come alive in this whole thing.
And so, what going into it, like, what was your plan? Like, were you going to hire writers and journalists or opinion people, or were you going to be creating the content, or what was that?
No. So what happened was I was watching what was happening online and where I was consuming content, and there's one website called Real Clear Politics. Okay, they're now very successful. You see them everywhere now because they have the Real Clear Politics like combination of polls. They take all the big polls and they combine them into the Real Clear Politics poll. That's like basically an average of like the 10 most recent big time polls. Okay, so if you're into this stuff, that's what people pay attention to, and it's very, very accurate because it's basically compiling all results from all these polls. Mm-hmm. So what they did was they listed out like the best article pieces of the day, best opinion articles of the day. So I was going in there every single day and consuming the stuff, and what I started to notice was I like certain writers, and I'm always looking for their names. I don't really care what the title is. So I
do the same thing today. Yeah. I only read like two or three people. You know.
Right. You get into someone's style, their tone, you agree with them, you disagree with them, whatever it is. So I just started to kind of notice what was happening online. And I came up with the idea to create a website that had the best of both sides. Basically, the left side and the right. And I was going to match up opinion pieces up against each other. So we had like a section for the war, and it was just the best opinion pieces from the left of that day and the best opinion pieces from the right. And then it would be politics, then it would be something else, like the home front, you know, like broken up into categories. Mm-hmm. I thought it was cool. It was cool. What I learned very quickly is that nobody wants to hear the other side.
Right. So that business is so polarized.
It's so polarized.
You see that in news today, is it has to cater. Like that's why I hate watching things like MSNBC or Fox News, is because it's like whatever side you're on, it's like, you know, only people who are thinking just like you are, it's just, you know, they're just talking to each other.
Right. It's just the nature of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, not to lose the entire podcast episode on just this, but some of the things I learned were people are opinionated, and trying to satisfy both sides was a bad idea. When we picked one side, we did a lot better immediately. We used the energy around politics to drive a lot of traffic. So we'd post things on Reddit, we'd post things on Dig. And then we got into a dangerous place where we were looking at vanity metrics that did not matter to the business. So we'd look at, you know, 50,000 uniques in a month, and we'd say, we are getting somewhere. In reality, we were making like $250 from AdSense. But then we thought, hey, we're going to build this up and then expand into sports and expand into this and expand into finance. And then we're going to start selling ad space. The problem was we weren't going for the money first. We weren't going what I now see as the preferred route. Go B2B, offer something of value, ask for money. Instead, we were saying, let's build it and then we'll monetize later. And we weren't in a position to do that properly. We didn't have connections to VC, and we didn't have enough technology. So it kind of, after a while, it started to.
Well, to that point, I mean, go for money first. I mean, I guess what you're saying is, you kind of chose the wrong business, the wrong business model.
Like, business model.
Because the content business is like, you have to get the traffic numbers first before you can really monetize that. Right. But if you were to build a software product, then yeah, you can get money from day one.
Exactly. And content and advertising is cool if you know what you're doing in that game, and if you have the resources to spend before the business starts to generate money. We had neither. And so I let the passion of the project dictate. And then we looked at these vanity metrics that led us down the path of believing that we were actually getting somewhere. And then it all basically came crashing and burning down with one investor meeting with the founder of MP3.com, very cool, very smart guy. We got connected with him through a family connection, and he basically just destroyed us and lit us on fire over a lunch. And it was not being a jerk. He was just being honest, because it was through a family friend, and he was like, guys, I'm not going to bullshit you. I'm going to be honest because I care about the person who introduced us, so I'm going to be honest. And he just lit the whole thing on fire. And we went back home, looked at each other, and we're like,
what are we doing now?
Maybe that's exactly when we looked over to my older brother, who was like, hey, you have an e-commerce store that you're kind of getting bored. you mind if we take over that e-commerce store? And that's how that happened.
Mm-hmm.
Very so there's cool. there's my first debacle. how about you? What do you got?
Well, the first one is it's kind of similar in that it was also a content site. It was a blog, which I guess is no longer up, but it was called Serve the Song. And like I mentioned, I used to be very into music and music production. So that was actually like a blog all about music production, kind of like tutorials on using popular music software. Like engine audio production software, also like songwriting. I was writing a lot about like the craft of songwriting and composing music, and that was kind of the first time I learned about blogging as a business. And I think I was just inspired by the idea of oh, you can actually build a blog and you can make a business out of it. Like that was like the first. I think what happened was I discovered. Problogger.net, Darren Rouse's site.
Right.
I don't remember how I got came across it. Maybe it was like through a connection from like I don't know Envato. I was reading Freelance Switch a lot at the time.
Right.
So this was in my very first year of being a freelance web designer. I had recently quit my job, went freelance. I was doing like my very first kind of freelance client projects, but then I came across this idea of blogging for a living, and just got really interested in learning all about that. And I was like, all right, well, I gotta like launch something just to kind of cut my teeth at this. And I was like, well, what am I into? What am I doing? And at the time I was still doing a lot of music. So I was like, all right, I'll start a blog about music. That was a really good learning experience for me because I learned all about the mechanics of blogging. Like I think that was a really good foundation for all the writing and all the content that creation that I did over the years that followed was mostly it comes back to the stuff that I was researching then on like how to blog, how to write for the web, how to start to build an audience and connect with readers. And actually that blog started to gain a little bit of traction. I remember I was doing a couple of like video tutorials about some pretty popular music production software and those were doing pretty well on fairly well on YouTube, getting random hits and whatnot. And what I learned there was, number one, YouTube as a search channel is way bigger than I thought it was. And the other thing that I learned about was kind of building on top of the popularity of an existing software or an existing tool. So if you're writing about a very popular but niche tool or software, that can attract very targeted readers, and that can do pretty well.
Nice.
Especially if you're teaching how to use it. So I really learned, I guess the reason why it eventually fizzled out, in less than a year was just that like any other business, like any other blogging business, I lost steam. I was very much caught up in a lot of client work. And back then it was like my early client work. So I was still learning a lot on that end as well. Kind of lost focus. And I wish I had actually stuck with that one because that one actually started to gain traction, get a little bit of a readership. I wish I had known about things like building an email list at the time, but I didn't. I was kind of focused on social media and stuff.
Yeah, how many years ago is this?
This was 2008. Mm-hmm. This was like the beginning of 2008.
Right. Blogging has changed the arsenal of weapons to monetize and different business models, and it's just matured. Yeah, there are a lot more options now.
Totally. And it really changed a lot. And I think back then it was big at the time, but it was not what it is today. So that was a good learning experience. I ended up actually selling that site to someone for practically nothing. But that was interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting but it's not up anymore.
I just checked the website. I guess the person kind of took it down or stopped working on it or whatever.
It's funny. I checked the domains of the site of the businesses we're talking about now too. One of them is just like, I don't even know. It's like a Bootstrap template or something. All right, cool, man. Should we move on to the next shame for
yep.
me?
Yep, absolutely.
All right, cool. So the next business that didn't work out. So this is after selling the e-commerce store. So I'm randomly reading, I don't even know, I think I got an email from Inc. magazine. So I'm reading. They had like a highlight. You know, they like generate interest in the Inc. 500 before it comes out. So they have like these features of like interesting companies that are coming out, that are going to be in the Inc. 500 in when the issue comes out. Cool. So randomly, I come across this article. I read about this kid in New Orleans who has a company that does on-hold messaging. Okay? These are the recorded phone things when you call your doctor or call, I don't know, anyone. And they put you on hold and you hear a recording telling about how cool the business is and to ask them about this. And
yeah,
everyone knows what I'm talking about. Okay. This kid managed to build up a client base of 4,000 customers in a span of like 2 years, paying him $50 a month. So I took out, I'm reading this, I took out my calculator. I go, 4,000 times 50. This motherfucker is making $200,000 a month. And it's like, it's just him. So wow. I read that and scratched my head. And I was like, I need to talk to this guy. So I reach out to him. And he's like, yo, I have gotten bombarded with people after this article came out, obviously. But you're the only one who's like my age and isn't some weird, stiff, like old businessman. And I can like talk to you. So I'm willing to talk. I basically said, like, look, man, teach me what the hell you're doing. And let's see if we can make money together on it. He was like, all right, cool. So I finagled my way into a partnership with this guy, and so we started an on-hold messaging company.
Wait! I gotta hear it. Like, what's happening here? Like,
all right. So you're
just randomly emailing this guy who happens to be getting like thousands of emails from other readers of Inc. magazine right now. Mm-hmm. First of all, how do you connect with him? But then, what are you saying to him when you're on the phone with him? Like, how does that turn into a partnership?
Okay, so. I think we said this a few episodes ago. The power of a convincing email should never be underestimated. You can do anything if you can write a convincing email. So I wrote a convincing email that convinced him to respond back and then get on the phone with me. Essentially what I said
was – So like was, short, concise.
Yeah. In other words, you are the most
connecting,
amazing.
Like right. With like – yeah.
Yeah, like you are the most amazing person in the world. I am slightly less amazing. We should talk, you know, in so many words, like flatter and then build myself up and then say,
okay,
hey.
But he has this established business. You're a stranger. What happens next?
I basically said, look, man, I am very interested in what you're doing. I just sold a business. I have some resources. I'm not like wasting your time here. What in God's name did you do? How you know, tell me what is happening here. Tell me how this works. So it turns out this business is beautiful. This business is beautiful. And I want it in. So it's not difficult to start because what you're doing is selling. That's all you're doing. All I wanted after, if you'll recall, after selling the e-commerce business, all I wanted was a recurring revenue business. I had just sold something like, I don't know, several thousand people, convincing them to buy like solar lights and hammocks and like electric fireplaces for me, okay? at the end of it, if you shut off advertising, there's like a trickle of money that comes in. So I felt like an idiot. I was like, if I had just worked this hard and worked on something that has recurring revenue, I would be in a much better position right now. So I said, next business must have recurring revenue.
All about recurring, yep.
Right. I'm not a technical guy, so I don't think software and only software. So I came across this guy and I'm like, holy shit, this is recurring and all you have to do is sell because all the work is done by like voice studios and voice actors and it's all like – it's a piece of cake to set up. Mm-hmm. So I see this and I'm like, yo, I can set this up. I you know, I can be creative enough to set this thing up. So we throw together a website. Launch it and start selling.
I thought he had an established business, though.
He does have an established business, but the beauty of this business is that there's nothing there. It's just a salesman, and then
behind, so he was just selling. Like he got those 4,000 customers from just like in-person sales.
This is the thing that blew my mind, and the reason one of the reasons that we went into the business is because I thought I had the secret sauce because this kid. taught me what he did. And here's what he did. This is the beauty of leverage through alternative sales channels, right? That's the big lesson from this business, the big positive lesson. This guy, instead of trying to sell businesses, what he did is he'd go to conventions and conferences and meetups and whatever of people who install phones, phone system salespeople and installers. And he'd say, hey, you're going into this office anyway. You're dealing with their phone system. They trust you. They like you. Here's the deal. You and me, we're boys. All you have to do is recommend my service. Anytime someone signs up through you, I'll give you $400 in cash. So this blew people's minds. These guys who are making $22,000 a year, God bless them, but holy, you know, it's a real opportunity for them to make a lot more money. Mm. He had dozens and dozens and dozens of people out there installing phones, doing work on phone systems and selling his product for him. And
genius.
He would just sell hundreds of these every month.
I was going straight to the resellers. Not even resellers. They're like affiliates, I guess.
Affiliates, but this is like ground level affiliate, man. Like I will send you a check for $400. And we just met. We just went drinking after the conference. Like we're boys. So the kid was a genius in that way. So he built up an army that everyone does the sales for him. He had like two part-time people doing the customer service, and then everything is outsourced to the music and voice studios that do all the actual work. So this is like the most efficient thing. It blew my mind. I was like, good God, I will do anything to be in that position. So that's the negative lesson of this. Just because someone else is doing it, just because they're successful at it, just because you can enter the business does not necessarily mean that you should or that you'll be successful in it yourself. And I learned that the hard way and basically wasted 6 months of my time. Huh. We had come in after the recession and he had come in before. So whereas people beforehand, before the recession who were flying high, for them $49 a month was like, yeah, whatever. You know, everything's going to be great forever. So why not? And then after the recession, $49 was like, wait a minute, this is a real decision. I have to talk to my boss. So it changed the mood significantly. And we also were not nearly as successful at making real relationships, connections with people.
Right. You're the relationships with the installers, not the end customers.
Right.
Or so the business did.
Yes. So what ended up happening is we ended up getting, you know, a number of clients, I don't know, a few dozen or something. And then at the end of it, when we wanted out, we actually sold the customers back to him. He was like, cool, man. I understand it didn't work out. You know, best of luck. I'll just buy your customers for $500 a pop, you know, send it over to him and call it a day. So it was, I wish we could have made that work, man.
Yeah, that's a great business he's got there.
Right.
Freaking amazing. Cool. So the next one, this one was a little, it was going to be, I guess this was probably my first attempt at building a web app. And this was, I think, around 2010, either 2009 or 2010. At the time, so this was called Skipper. And
I have not heard of this. tell us more. What did it do?
So at the time, I was doing a lot of client work, like heavily into client work at this point. And I was starting to scale up beyond just myself, starting to not hire full-timers, but I was very much into assembling small teams of other freelancers on a project basis. I had a network of, at the time, I started growing up to like 5 to 10 other contractors working with me at any given time.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, for like one website project, it would be like me plus a designer, plus a developer, and sometimes bringing in like a copywriter. And I would have like five of those going at any time. And I was doing pretty well with that. But it started to get it. The thing was there wasn't a very clear problem that I was trying to solve here. I was just kind of interested in building some kind of solution. But it was at the same time, I was kind of scratching my own itch because I was looking for a way to,
that sounds messy.
Well, it was basically what I was calling this was like a team relationship management app. I was trying to play off of like customer relationship management, but for your team.
All right.
And basically it's like an interface where you're keeping like profiles for the people that you work with. And then that's kind of as far as I I got with it in terms of the concept. And I was like, well, if we just kind of build this interface, then all these other like killer features are going to just magically appear somehow from just using it and figuring out how we want to use it. And then magically this is going to get into the hands of customers and they're going to tell us what to build. And I was just assuming all these things with, this was before I learned anything about anything when it comes to building a product online, you know?
Right. Skipping over the most difficult parts.
Yeah.
Right. And I we've all done that.
And I'm a designer developer. So I got really excited about designing and developing this thing. I dove right into designing wireframes and then full on HTML mockups of the pages. But I did not have the skills to code this thing by any means. So I actually partnered up with a guy. How did I meet him? There was like a website. It's not founder dating.
That's what came to mind.
It's not that, but it's something just like it. I forgot the name of it. Where, you know, I found someone who was like saying like they're a developer, they're looking for projects to partner up on, reached out to him and we kind of just had a call and just decided to partner up like 50-50 on this thing. And I actually worked with him on it for, it must've been a good 5 or 6 months we were working together. And you know, he's a cool guy, really skilled developer, but he had a full-time job, working for a big corporation as a developer. And so he was basically, we were doing calls like once a week, once every 2 weeks, we would do a call at night after he gets home. I'm still balancing client work as well. The problem, aside from the problem that this thing was not like a problem solution fit and all that, we were just building basically nothing. The other problem was that we were just not making progress. Like I had all these ideas, like let's just build out these screens and then go forward. And I'm trying to give him everything he needs. And he was just coming back with like little tweaks happening over like a 2 week period. And I'm just like, this momentum is just so slow.
Yeah.
Like nothing is happening here. And so that kind of just was like grinding to a screeching halt after 5 or 6 months, to the point where I don't even remember if we decided to kind of just call it quits. We were just like, all right, this is not happening.
stop responding to each other's emails.
Yeah. I mean, you know, maybe we did. I forgot,
I have to tell you, that sounds like with more experience and more knowledge and kind of maturity, whatever the hell you want to call it, that you might've been able to figure something out there. Cause there is an issue. It's just that maybe you guys were too insulated instead of talking to people and having them put you on the right track. Like it was too isolated in building something that wasn't quite right, but there's something there. I mean,
you know, now that I think about it, I actually do remember getting on the phone with a few other founders of agencies, to ask them about how they manage their remote contractors.
Right.
Now that I think about it, I think I was actually talking to a few people about it, and I was just trying to ask them like, how do you handle hiring? How do you handle like managing who's available? And that's around like what I was trying to work on here. It was like, cause I always had an issue with like, who's actually currently available.
What are their skills?
Yeah. Cause like, then I'm going out and writing proposals for projects and I need to know like, all right, if I'm going to write a $20,000 proposal for this, I need to know I've got people lined up, you know, without having full-time employees.
Right, and knowing that the guy who costs $18 an hour is available and the one who costs $9. I mean, there is an issue there to be dealt with. That's interesting.
Yeah, so that's basically it. I think that the thing that I learned there, number one, is partnerships are hard. I believe that was the first partnership that I had taken on. As in like my freelancing self-employment career. Great guy to work with, really talented, but I realized that we were just not moving fast enough. And I was much more driven to move faster than he was, especially since he had the full-time job.
Yep.
So I learned that like, yeah, there are so many different things that need to align. It's not just getting along personally. It's personal
situation and like income need, and it's amazing this shit ever works.
Yeah, it is.
The number of possible things that can go wrong. I mean, there's a lot of luck involved.
Yeah. And the other thing is like scratching your own itch is not always enough. I think it's important. I think
it's a good starting point.
It is a good starting point. It doesn't have to be a scratch your own itch, you know, but I think a scratch your own itch product can work, but you need to go the extra step of really validating the problem and then really validating the solution. And I didn't really know enough about that at the time.
Cool, man. Very, very interesting. All right. Want to get into my my third one?
Yep.
And then we'll close it out with your third. So this is the company that I worked on right before Cardhook. So the frustration from this experience is what led me to say, okay, I've had this idea in my head for Cardhook for 2 years. Enough already. Let's actually get it built. So I don't even know how to make this long story short. I'll try. I'm from Israel originally. And there's a lot of very interesting innovation in Israel around agriculture, right? You basically have a small slice of desert and a bunch of Jews on it who are like trying to figure out how to make it work. So inevitably, there's going to be a lot of like innovation, engineering. They do amazing stuff with like water and sprinkler systems and like bio, you know, genetics and all this other types of stuff. A family friend, a serial entrepreneur in Israel, came across this new technology for aquaculture. So this is raising fish on land, right? It's a big business. It's one of these things that is an inevitable, monstrous industry because there are only so many fish in the ocean. You overfish, then there's a growing middle class. Demand for fish is not only outweighing supply, it is increasing at an increasing rate. So the only place to make up for it, here's my pitch in case you can't tell that I've practiced this, is through aquaculture. So we came across some technology and acquired it to produce saltwater fish on land fully recirculating, meaning no discharge. Okay, so you set up a farm in the middle of the desert next to MicroConf in Vegas, or you do it in Canada or Mexico or Namibia. It doesn't matter. You can produce high-value saltwater fish.
Wow.
In theory, okay? I'll add that at the end.
All right.
So really interesting business, very large potential. So I joined. We put money in and took a stake, and then I joined the management team. And I was tasked with U.S. and North American operations and raising money and finding partnerships and all that. Cool. So very cool, very interesting, very big opportunity. It did not work for me. The business is still up and running and it's doing stuff with the EU and like building the first big farm. It didn't work for me, and the big lesson that I got out of it was, A, go with your gut. I kind of knew it wasn't the right situation for me, but it was so exciting and the potential so big that I stuck with it anyway, and that was the real mistake. The big reason it didn't work is, you know, culture is such a fluffy word that I despise, but in this situation, it was culture. So I am from Israel, but I'm an American, man. I moved here when I was six, so I think like an American. And people here, we're legit, man. Americans are nice, proper, honest people, okay? And dealing with cultures from around the world, and in Israel, they're cowboys, man. They are cowboys. They are risk-loving, and you know, your ducks don't need to be all in a row before you move forward. In Israel, you go, and you figure that out on the way. There's an unbelievably interesting book called Startup Nation by Dan Senor about why Israel is so innovative, why businesses come out of this little tiny sliver of land, so many inventions, so many patents, so many startups. And in that, there's a lot of talk about the culture and the army and the need for quickly making decisions on your own instead of waiting for superiors. So all this stuff created a situation where I had no idea what was happening and could not function in the same team as my colleagues, as my co-founders.
Yeah. So you were in America. So, I mean, was this based in Israel?
It is kind of. It's based wherever money will be put into building a farm.
But like, was your involvement in it, were you going to stay where you were?
No, I was going to move to San Francisco, which is what I did. So I moved to San Francisco not only to raise money, but also to we were looking at a location just south of San Francisco to build a farm. So I came to San Francisco.
Oh, this was like not too long. Like I knew you when you were doing this, right?
This was
because I remember you were going out to San Fran like early on. I don't know.
Right. So I was looking exactly. By that time, I was already had one foot out the door. Like, this might not work out. Let me start to look at other avenues. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yeah. So it just ended up in a situation where it was very obvious that this was not going to work out, and that's when I said, "Okay, I'm already out here in San Francisco. My shit's already in storage. I got my 1 year old with me and my wife, and we don't have a house and we have no rent. It's like, screw it, man. Let's go travel." While we have the opportunity, and that's that trip to San Francisco is what led to the coincidental meeting of my co-founder, the developer, in the laundromat in San Francisco.
Amazing,
the family friend, and that's a month later launching the first version of, or 2 months later, while in Germany, launching the first version of Cardhook.
Very cool.
So,
wow, yeah,
yeah.
I think we've both been all over the place. But you're like the subject matter and like the industries that you got into and some of these businesses are like really literally all over the map.
I told you, agnostic, my friend. Just the money.
Yep.
All right, cool. How about you?
The last one, and I can't believe I can't remember the name of this thing. But it was basically this was something that. It was a partnership between me and a friend, Brad Tunar, who I think is going to MicroConf this year as well.
Yeah, I think so.
WordPress developer, and he and I had been friends, and we had been working together a little bit on various client projects together and doing a few different things. So we were he kind of approached me with this idea of what freelancers should do with their overflow work. People like freelancers constantly get like completely booked up, and then they kind of pass on incoming work to other freelancers. And so his idea was to build some kind of like referral network, a market. We weren't sure if it was like a marketplace or like a mailing list that you get in on. And then when you get an incoming lead, you would kind of like pass it on to someone else in the list, but everyone in the list has to be kind of approved as like being high quality and reliable and all that.
Interesting.
And then we were thinking about something. I think what part of the problem is like we weren't totally clear on how exactly this thing should work. And we knew the area that we wanted to work in, but I can't say that it was totally like solving a problem again. I think basically we were just looking to have some kind of like referral fee from a past like a project that you would pass along.
Right. You just knew that there was value there. Like you're saying no to money and having it walk away, whereas there might be some value there somewhere.
Yeah. And it's also like a kind of a lead gen service for freelancers who need leads, but it's also a way for freelancers to earn money if they're giving away leads.
Right.
So I think we weren't totally clear on exactly how that business model would work. Another thing that we learned there was, well, I guess we would have learned this because the thing that never actually launched, we didn't get very far with it, but it would have been a two-sided marketplace, which is not totally ideal.
So hard.
Meaning it only has value if there are leads coming through it. And the only way to get leads coming through it is to get a lot of freelancers involved in it. So, you know, that makes it kind of a two-sided marketplace. The partnership was solid. Working with Brad, like he and I actually still kind of partner up on our annual, Vermont Big Snow Tiny Conf, which I'm sure we'll do for a third year next year.
Yeah, that's a good sign. You guys work together on something that didn't work and still buddies and still work together. You know, that's...
Yeah, totally. You know, I think it was just the product wasn't quite right. I think he and I both got super busy with our other stuff going on. I was... At the time, this was a couple of years ago, I was still very much into client work. I think he was doing client work. We just got pretty busy. I think we just, another one of those cases of, all right, we made a few mock-ups of this thing. We talked about it for a couple of months and then, nothing happened.
Yep. Plenty of those in everyone's background.
Yep.
Nice, man. So what's the big lesson? Is it like, I don't even know what to tell you. Part of me says, you know, learn something from each experience and bring it on to the next. The other piece of me is like, just try not to fuck up and skip that whole learning experience and learn while succeeding instead of while failing. But I guess the truth is we don't really have much control over it. So I think the important thing is to not be discouraged, not give up.
Yeah, you know, and I think you and I definitely come from very different places and backgrounds and experiences. I think for me, these things represent my education. Like I never went to business school. I never thought about entrepreneurship really before I was in my 20s. I was very focused on music. I went to school for it. I thought I was going to work in studios my whole life. It wasn't until I actually became a freelancer that I started even coming across the whole idea that you can make products online. Like I never even thought of that as a thing. So I look at these things like building up my first blog and music and like doing, Skipper. And also in these years, which I didn't list it here because it didn't totally fail, is I created like WordPress themes. And that's actually still going today on the side. I think these are things for me, like learning how to build products, build digital products that people pay for that don't require your time. Mm-hmm. You know, and every time you learn a few things, you learn about the mechanics of like, what does it take to create something of value that's actually worth my time? And you know, I sunk a ton of time into all these things, making $0 from any of them. And I don't really regret that time because I truly looked at it. I even looked at Restaurant Engine this way. The time that I spend on this is I'm investing in my education. Just once I go through the act of creating these products, I'm going to be better on the other side because the next one that I create, it'll be even better. I'll get there faster. You know, that's the whole idea.
Yeah. I mean, I don't like to think of it that way because it sounds exhausting, but that's the truth. You learn from it and I don't even know what to say. For me, I think I look at it as like, you know how people say it's like 10 years of hard work before you're an overnight success?
Yeah.
That's what I see this as. Like this is banging your head up against the wall, trying different things, learning, getting better, making mistakes, learning from them. And then when, you know, quote, success comes and it looks easy, it looks like, hey, you started this this card hook thing and one thing led to another. And then 3 years later, you had this big success thing, this exit, whatever the hell you happens. It just would not have happened the same way and would not be nearly as likely to happen without all this tunneling around, fumbling in the dark that happened beforehand.
Yep. And hey, I mean, you never would have found your co-founder for Cardhook if you didn't get into the saltwater fish in the middle of the desert business.
That's how it all works, man. All right, cool, man. Well, that wraps it up for us. I hope you guys got a kick out of this. I hope you learned something from it. I hope people who have, you know, shameful, broken down, failed businesses in their closet don't feel quite as bad anymore. Like this is normal. It's not a big deal. Yep. But that wraps it up for us. Today's episode was sponsored by Podcast Motor. So to learn how Craig at Podcast Motor can take the pain out of podcasting, like he's done for us, it feels so good to just record and then have everything taken care of. To learn more about that, head over to podcastmotor.com. Tell Craig we sent you over. Craig, we love you. The amount of stress and work it's taken off of our backs is amazing. So podcasting is just more enjoyable and I'm looking forward to it much more. So to learn more about that, head over to podcastmotor.com.
Yeah, and that's totally. It. The audio editing taken off our plates and the work that he's done on the blog has been awesome. You know, yep. So yeah, really, really cool to have him on.
Cool. And to check out previous episodes, head over to bootstrapweb.com. If you're enjoying the show, head over to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review, por favor. And you can sign up for email updates for whenever a new episode is launched at bootstrapweb.com also. That's it, Brian. Until next time, hopefully it won't be filled with nearly as much shame and regret and embarrassment.
Yep. Yeah, talk to you next week.
All right. Cheers. Right.